people do we have that are from labs or and IT folks and disease surveillance people? Okay. I feel a little bit like a fish out of water here because this is really not really working as much with the lab systems as what we do when we get the information out of our lab systems and then we use it for disease surveillance purposes. So some relationship and maybe showing how the standards are so important, but really looking more about how those data come into our system and how they come automatically. I'd like to acknowledge several people that are involved in this work. Certainly Lily Tatham and Jenny Seiler are key people at the state of Ohio, and I'll have their contact information at the end. But many people involved in the process, both on the surveillance side and the IT team. The objectives for today that I'd like to go through is to describe how we receive, process, and then directly import electronic lab reports into our disease reporting system, to show which of those processes are automated, which is really important. I think if you've been to some of the other sessions, we know that when we get electronic lab reports, we're just going to get it be deluged with a lot more information than we get today. So the automated portion is really important, to then also show what's manual through that process, and then to outline what we see as benefits, challenges, and our next steps. This would probably have been better for a Monday morning presentation. I think you probably all know what these acronyms stand for, so I won't talk about those. This is at a very high level what I'm going to talk about today. We see our process as being three major steps. On the left-hand side, we have the lab actually giving us a file in an HL7 format or in an ASCII format. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but right now we can accept a 231 file, a 23Z file, or we will also accept an ASCII file, and that's important for lots of the labs, especially our hospitals. The second step in the process is our gateway, and we have a lot of work that happens there. The most important piece being that it actually identifies the reportable condition, and then through that process, it then determines which one of our information systems that disease report goes to. Today, we have disease reports flowing into our STD-MIS system, which is the CDC surveillance system for sexually transmitted diseases, and then we have what we call our Ohio Disease Reporting System. That's our general system for disease reporting, and we have the data flowing there, and that's the part that I'm going to be talking about today. The first step to the process is the lab sending us the file, and by no means is this a trivial step, because by getting the data in the proper format, that's how we can actually achieve getting the data into our system and getting the data into our system without actually having to have a lot of interaction. We work with the lab, we ask them to send us a list of the lab tests they're planning to send us, the lab results they're planning to send us, and what we do is we take a look at that information and see if we've already have it mapped to reportable conditions in our system or if we have to do that work. So it gets us prepared for what we're going to be receiving from them. As we've heard from previous presenters, we have to have a secure mechanism for those data to transfer to us. And the lab works to compose a complete and properly formatted HL7 message. And again, this is something that is not trivial to do either. We can get HL7 messages, but we may not get the information put together in correct format. We sometimes get text results in the wrong places of the message, and again, we can't get it to flow the way it needs to be if it's not in the correct format. And we are using the CDC, the FIN standard for that message. That's what we're requesting. We then go through an iterative process to test the messages that are coming through at the very basic level. We check to make sure that what we get electronically, we were getting on paper. But then we also have to test those messages again to make sure we're getting all the pieces of information, that it's coming in the proper format so that we can get it into our system. As far as the test names and codes, we've talked about LOINCs or LOINCs. Our preference is to receive them, but again, we know some of the labs aren't there yet, so if they want to give us local codes, we will accept local codes, but we ask that they do that mapping or work toward that mapping. So far, we're working with a couple labs, and they've identified over 400 flowing codes that they're going to be sending. However, within our disease reporting staff, our epidemiologists have identified over 2,400 additional codes that potentially could be coming into our system. And as an old microbiology tech, I find it incredible that there are that many codes out there, but it shows how very detailed that whole process is, but it's also why it takes the labs a long time sometimes to get these things set up. For results, our preference is to get the SNOMEDs, and these are really important when we have some of the more generic lab test names, like a stool culture. It doesn't really tell you very much, as opposed to a test that would be for hepatitis B surface antigen that you can very easily tell gets mapped to that hepatitis B. So when we have some of those generic tests, we ask for the SNOMED results in addition, because again, we can figure out what reportable condition that is and get it right into our system. The second step to our process is our gateway process. This is where the data are parsed and where they're normalized. If somehow those data don't come in that standard format, we take a look to identify, identify the test name. The test name is what determines the reportable condition. The reportable condition then determines what information system it goes into, and then that report gets routed to the system where it needs to be going. We have some messages that fail in the gateway process, and so when they fail there, we have a way that we can go through and manually work through those messages. We occasionally have messages that fail in parsing or normalization, and if that happens, our IT team goes in and corrects those messages. We sometimes will have messages, even though we have done all this mapping up front, that sometimes don't map to a reportable condition, and so our ELR coordinator will go in and say, okay, we see what this is, this should be mapped here, and so the next time it will flow without any intervention. The Ohio Disease Reporting System is where most of our data go, and this is where we have this seamless process. It's a web-based system. It is not the CDC NED system. It's a homegrown solution. It's a person-based system, and it's accessible to all of our disease surveillance people at the state level, as well as our local health departments. And so we see what they see. Everybody has the same access. It was built, it came into being, I think, early 2001, accommodating traditional paper-based reporting, and we now have disease reports that are entered both at the state level, at our local public health level, and about a year ago, we extended our system to our hospital infection control practitioners so that they can also enter disease reports. So we have many who have access to the system. And we now have, as of about a year ago, we can now import ELR messages with minimal human intervention. The process that we go through for this import is that the system looks to see if the person's already in the system. It then goes to look and see if there's a match on that reportable condition. And then beyond the reportable condition, it goes to see if it's actually a new event, a new reportable disease for that person, or whether it's a subsequent follow-up test to a report that's already in there. We have an automated import that starts with a person match. We have developed about 20 different algorithms for what could be potentially matches, and we've done that through talking to some of the other states that have done some of this before us. So we have about 20 different matches that are based on mostly demographics, but also some additional fields like reportable disease, sometimes medical record number, and some other things. So the process goes through to see if any of those things are matching. We have set criteria for an exact match to be if we have a match on the last name, the first name, the sex, and a date of birth. And so that would be an exact match. All of those other matches of those 19 or so algorithms we set as possible matches. We also then do a disease match, and we have two types of disease matches. We have an exact match, so it would be the same exact reportable condition, but then we also have some grouped reportable conditions. And this is like acute and chronic hepatitis B. If we would get a hepatitis report from a lab, it's really hard to distinguish whether or not that's an acute case of disease or a chronic case of disease. So we have groupings for those So we may not have the exact match, but if we have groups matching, we have that something that we also will work with. If it is an exact reportable condition, we then check for what we call event matches. And this is something, I'm not sure that this is actually CDC defined. I think this is something that our epidemiologists at the state level have developed. But basically, trying to figure out if you get a second report of a salmonella on a person, is that really related to the episode of disease that you already have in the system, or is it actually a new disease report? And when we're dealing with something like salmonellosis, if we have it in a child in a daycare center, or a food handler, or something like that, there could be multiple specimens that would come in on that person because that's done to make sure that the person actually clears the infection before they can go back and do their job or be in the daycare center. And so some of these things are what we've developed. I'm not sure if CDC necessarily agrees with them, but if we see a report within 30 days for salmonella, and actually for most of the diseases, we consider that to be the same event. If it's within 7 days for chlamydia and gonorrhea, that's the same event. And actually any hepatitis B we would match just because, again, we can't distinguish the acute and the chronic. But if it is within those time intervals, we're saying then that's not only an exact disease match, it's also an exact match on the event. So the automated import. If the system goes through and actually gets that exact match on those four fields, the last name, first name, date of birth, and the sex, it will automatically update the report that we already have in our disease reporting system. If there's neither an exact match nor a possible match, it just automatically creates a new person and a new disease report. And I'm not sure how well you can see this in the back, but all of these data fields will just automatically populate. And so there's no human intervention to get this piece of information into the system. And again, this is the beauty of what we see, is that we get these disease reports, but the data are going exactly into the fields that we want them to be in. And again, that goes back to the fact that we're getting that standardized file from the lab. On the disease side, or the lab side, if it's an exact disease and event match, we have the same thing happen. All of the lab fields will just automatically populate with any of the information that comes in on that ELR record. If it's an exact disease match, but the event is different, so it's a salmonella case, but it's 6 months later, again, it will automatically create the lab report for the person. And if there's neither an exact nor a group disease match, again, it will just simply create a new disease report. And this is showing what our lab screen looks like within our application. And again, there's a lot of detail here on the test name, the method, the result. And again, all of these are just automatically populated. And just as an example, for those of you who may not know how other systems work, oftentimes these data might come in electronically, but they'll go into a notes field. And so somebody still has to go in and actually manually work with those records before they can actually get the work done. And this is an example of something with a little more detail. When we get that HL7 message and it's a numeric, and it's something that has a reference range, again, because that message is standardized, we get the reference information, we get the numeric information, and then the system behind the scenes will compare those two and actually automatically populate the result. So again, one less thing for the person to do. And the important thing about that is, in addition to everything else we've been doing to try to automate what we do, we have developed what we call some automated algorithms for case classification. CDC has specific definitions for all of the diseases that are reportable, and we have those run behind the scenes as well. So someone doesn't have to go and manually say, or to look at the record and say, oh, if this is positive, then it's a confirmed case and we send it to CDC. We have for about 15 diseases where that whole process is automated, and the system will just run on its own and make those determinations. We have a few other automated processes, and the first three things that are listed here are things that would happen if somebody was entering this report by hand. We have some data edit checks for dates, so that if dates are before or after certain things, The system will actually take a look at that. One of the most important things that our system does when we enter disease reports by hand is that when an address is entered for a person, our data are geocoded in real time. And so if somebody's putting in 123 Main Street, it not only geocodes it, but it also then returns the health jurisdiction that that disease report belongs to. In Ohio, the way laboratory or any disease reporting works, it's supposed to go to the health jurisdiction where that person resides. We have 88 health departments or 88 counties in Ohio, but we have about 140 local health jurisdictions. And so obviously we have some city health departments as well as our county health departments. And even if we have a health department or an address for somebody, say, that lives in Cincinnati, for some reason or other, they may not be within the Cincinnati health jurisdiction. So our geocoding can go in and actually determine that. And again, this is something that runs behind the scenes when those ELR data come in. So again, that assignment to the correct health jurisdiction is happening as well. Providers and facilities are associated, so we don't create additional providers and facilities. And then finally, anything that's processed automatically through ELR is noted as such. And this screen is showing an example of that, that this is a record. It was created by ELR. Down here we have a variety of notes that were generated, and those were generated by ELR. So we keep our audit tracking with the ELR basically being another user in the system. So, manual importing. We have several times when we would have to do manual importing. This is when the person doesn't match exactly, when it's a possible person match, when we have an exact person match, but it doesn't match to an exact reportable disease, but it matches to a group. And then finally, when we have a possible person and either an exact or a group disease match. And this will come up, and a user who has access to do this manual import will actually see a screen when they come into our application that lets them know that there are messages to be processed. And this is a role-based type of system. When we first rolled this out, we had very few people who had the ability to do this work. It was mostly people at the state level. We have since extended this to some of our local health departments so they can do this work as well. Over here, the user will go to open a queue, and this is what they will see. They will see messages to be processed. There's a variety of information on each of the cases. They can view the case or the message, and then if they click on the specific message ID, they'll then start the process for the manual import. The queue is set up by jurisdiction, so if I'm with the Cincinnati Health Department, I would be only able to do this for the cases that are in my jurisdiction. And this is an example of what the user would see, and this has a lot of information going on. Basically, we tried to combine a patient match import as well as a match on a reportable condition. But at the top here, this is what is coming in with our ELR message. And on the bottom down here, we show what's the potential match within the Ohio Disease Reporting System. And so the user can take a look at this. At this point, they would probably take a look mostly at the person to see if the person's matching. And again, you can see the name information, you can see date of birth and other demographics. If the user takes a look at this and compares it down to the record down here and says, I don't think it's the same person, they would simply click up here and say, I want to create a new person record in the system and a new disease report. If they think it does match, they would come down here and they would select it, and they would then come to a screen that lets them actually compare the data in more detail and make some more decisions about what to do. Down here on the bottom, this is comparing the actual lab information. So here's the ELR information. And then down here is what we have existing in our disease reporting system. And so again, the user can go in and say, yes, I think this is the same disease report, or it's an extension of the original disease report. This is I'm not sure if you can see it at the end back of the room, but it's basically a second test on someone with hepatitis C. But they can go in and they can either say, no, I don't think it's the same disease report, I want to create a new case. Or they can come down here and say, yes, I think this report relates to the previous one, and they can simply update it. As they do that action, they also have an opportunity to look at the demographics. This is the demographic from the disease reporting system, and this is the demographic information that we have from the ELR record. And the way our system merges these things together is it's not you take what's in ODRS or you take what's in ELR. It actually blends the best of both pieces of information. So in this example, which maybe not be the best one, but if we had a date of birth in the ELR record, but we didn't have it in ODRS, and if we had gender information or race information in ODRS, but we didn't have it in ELR, when we go to make this save, the system will take the best of both of those and give us a more complete record. So it's not a matter of choosing one over the other. If there's things that are discrepant, they will have one of these little circles, and the user has to go in and actually decide which one they want to be saved. And so here we have some first names that are a little bit different, and so the user just toggles to decide which one of those they want to choose. Whenever they make that then next decision, whether it's a new case or an update to a case, they then see a summary screen. And we make sure that the user sees this, because once this action's done, it can't be undone, or it can't be undone by them. It would have to be undone by somebody behind the scenes. So we have them take a look at this screen, make sure it's what they want to do. If it's not, they can go back and they can make some edits. If it is what they want to do, they go in, they save the record, and they get an update that the record has been loaded. And so we think that this is a pretty easy process. As I mentioned, we started it with our state folks. When we thought that it was working pretty well, we actually pushed it out to our local health departments. And so far, we found that it actually does work pretty well. We have some other manual processes that are done, and these are done by our ELR administrator. Sometimes we have those generic tests that come in that haven't yet been mapped, and so they will go in and they'll map the test name or the test result. We have some reportable diseases in Ohio. I don't know if other states have this, where it might be reportable, but it might only be reportable in it might be a congenital type of disease, so it's only reportable in certain age groups. And we also have some results sometimes that are only reportable for certain specimen types. We have a variety of invasive diseases that are reportable in Ohio. So if we get it from a blood specimen, it's reportable. If we get it from a skin specimen, it won't be. So some of these things, the ELR administrator will go in. If it's something that we should be getting, they'll map it. If it's something that should not be reportable, it will simply be discarded. But we keep that at a different level, and it's somebody at the state. This is an example of the test name mapping that's done. And I won't go through the fields, but basically they have choices that they relate to that relate to the information system that we have. So they'll pull down what that test name should go to. We also have test result mapping. This is an example of that generic test where we have to look at the SNOMED code instead. And the neat thing about the test result and the test name mapping, once those are mapped, they do not need to be mapped again. So the system will remember that, so the next time it sees that code, the next time it sees that SNOMED, it'll know where that report needs to set. We also have text result mapping. That's one of the issues we sometimes deal with, is that the information comes in as a text field, and so again, we need to map those by hand. So the end result to all of this is that we may create a new person in the system and a new disease report. We might create a new disease report for someone that's already in the system, or we might update a disease report, or we will discard the report. We have been doing this for about a year now. We put together some data for the period from the first 6 months of the year. Right now we're doing ELR with two labs, with Mayo and also with the corrections lab within the state of Ohio. And in 6 months' time, we got about 7,000 disease reports. About 25% or a quarter of them actually were a new person and a new disease report. A very small percentage were a new disease report for somebody that was already in the system. And about 73% were updates of reports, which might not sound like it's all that useful, but it's because it was a lot of the correction facility. We had a lot of hepatitis B and a lot of hepatitis C. But regardless, if we didn't get them electronically, we would have been processing them by hand. The neat thing that we really think, and why we think this is such important work, is that 84% of these processed without anybody having to touch the report. And as we, again, as we've heard, with ELR, we know we're going to get more data being reported, we're going to be getting it faster, and if we can't have a way to process these automatically, we're really not going to do anything to decrease the workload. So 84% processing automatically. When we look at timeliness, we know timeliness of disease reporting is one of the other benefits of electronic lab reports. Looking at some of the diseases here, we've calculated how many reports and then the mean lag. And what we're seeing for the diseases that we have here, that the disease reports are much more timely by between 2 to 15 days. So if we're talking about diseases that require some sort of public health follow-up, getting that data into the system that much faster is really important for public health. And indeed, that is one of the benefits, not just to us at the state level, but also to our local public health practitioners, is that the reporting is more timely. But it's not just more timely, it actually gets into the information system and they can start their public health follow-up of those cases. The reporting is much more complete. We really haven't done any analyses yet to figure out how much more complete, but we know that we're missing disease reports today, and so that this is a way to make sure that it is more complete. It is reducing the paper that we get at the state, it's reducing the paper they get locally, and also the manual processing that goes with it. And again, because we can get it in that standardized format, it flows directly into our system. On the lab side, again, it's a reduction in paper and processing. The second thing, which I talked a little bit about, the fact that it automatically decides what health jurisdiction it goes to, that's huge for our labs. We get a lot of our lab reporting today centrally to the state simply because the labs can't figure out where to send a disease report. So incorporating that has also been important. It is helpful for the labs because they have one place that they can send it. They can send it in a single format and to a single location. The challenges that we see is that there's several. One of the major things is that lab information systems don't always capture patient demographics. And indeed, I think it was early July we went live with Cleveland Clinic and getting those data. And no sooner did the data start coming in that the local health departments were picking up at the phone and saying, we don't have any patient demographics on these people. The lab information systems don't always collect it. And so that has been one of the downsides to all this. If the system doesn't collect it and we don't get it, there's still additional work that needs to be done. So that's something that is an ongoing issue, especially as we're working with some of our hospital labs. Although we're working right now with some of the national labs, most of our hospital labs cannot give us an HL7 file. And so we probably have a handful that we're starting to work with, but that is just not something that their systems can do today. So even though we can start to work with Mayo and LabCorp and some of the large national labs, our hospital labs are not there yet. And then finally, even when the lab tries to send us something in the FIN standard, because of how their lab information system is set up, they can't always get the message formatted just exactly right. And if we don't have that happen, we can't get the data to flow directly into our system. Every once in a while, we'll get non-reportable results. We'll get proficiency testing. We'll get quality assurance, quality control. So we have to sift those things out. It's really not that big of a deal. But the time investment at the beginning for the lab to set this up is something that takes an awful lot of time. I heard yesterday from Massachusetts where they're actually going to the labs and helping them do that work. I don't know if that's something we can do in Ohio, but getting that set up in the beginning is something that really is a time investment. And the last thing is that some of our other systems at the Department of Health can't accept these files. So we have Mayo and some other places that would very much like to start giving us electronic lead results, but our systems aren't ready to accept them. So that's something that we need to work on our end. So our next steps, certainly to get electronic lab reports from more labs. We're working with our state lab right now. One would think that that should have been one of our first labs, but it's taken them some time to get there. We're hoping to go live with our STD data from them actually next month. We're working with other national labs and then also other hospital labs within the state. A major thing that we really think we need to work towards is getting some sort of standard ASCII format, because we think that it's going to be a long time before we get a lot of the labs to be able to give us an HL7 file. And so we'd very much like to work with anybody else out there who's looking at a standard ASCII format, because we think that's going to be a way to be able to get data in sooner than we might be able to otherwise. On our end, we are working to implement FinMS. Right now, we do most of this through a VPN, but we'd like to move to FinMS. And then, as I mentioned, we're trying to also figure out how we can start to accept some of the non-infectious disease reports, lead certainly being one of them. We're also looking at cancer pathology reporting and things of that nature as well. And although I'm the person up here, the detail people for all of this are actually Lily Tatham. She's our ELR coordinator on the surveillance side. And Jenny Seiler is our IT person who's actually developed all of the IT work to make this data flow the way that it does. And that's it. Are there any questions?
With regards to the manual work that's done, is there any feedback back to the laboratories that send the records, like if you make a correction or if you associate with your data, is there some sort of way so that the next time they send a message, it'll be automatic? That is useful.
Okay. The question is, do we have any feedback to the labs when the data don't come in the proper format? If it's something that we haven't already mapped, when we go through the mapping process, it will do that work automatically. And so it's usually a new lab test that we just didn't know that they were doing. So for that, we really do the work on our end. It's just something new that gets mapped on ours.
So the percentages of manual will go down as you map the messages?
Absolutely. The point being that we'd have less manual work as more things get mapped. And indeed, more of the work is really on the deduplication of the people and the lab results than the mapping, because of all the work that gets done up front.
Yeah, when you put up the issue about how many labs are missing the patient demographics, you have a question about that. And then your staff said, didn't notice anything about how many, what percentage of records actually ultimately get discarded because of missing or incomplete information that makes the lab record.
Mm-hmm. The question is, do we discard any messages because there's not enough information there? The discards that we have are usually because they're not reportable results. The data that we get, even if there's not a full patient address, as long as there's a patient information, a patient name, we will accept that. And the point of the matter being is that usually what we find is that's exactly what the lab has been sending us all these years, but on paper. And so, as I was mentioning, when we started getting Cleveland Clinic electronically, people said, well, gee, there's no demographics. Well, if they looked at the paper record, it wouldn't have been there either. But a big issue that we have found, especially with hospital labs, is that oftentimes the lab information systems in the hospitals don't collect demographics. They just don't even have those fields. And so the ideal would be that they actually would marry up their patient side of their record with their lab record before they would send it to us. But that's an additional piece of work that they don't normally do.
Okay, so then would that mean if the lab is with Joe Smith and the other demographic side of Joe Smith, then hopefully just treating that up in the case?
The question is, if we get Joe Smith and we can't tell whether or not he's matched to something, would that be a new case? Sometimes we'll get date of birth and we can match it up that way, but you're right, if not, then we would take it to be a new reportable condition and a new person in the system. And so we could have some cases that would be coming in that would be they would be duplicates if we had more information, but we don't know at the time. Within the system, within the disease reporting system, there's a queue functionality that I didn't show, and it will actually come in and show that there's been a record updated, and it would show up in what they call their new queue, and so they could take a look and decide if there's something they need to do with that record or whether they just need to take a look at it and close it out. But there's a queuing functionality that as soon as this would come in, it would show it to be a new case. The question is, do we append or do we override? We append. So it would be just like if you have somebody with hepatitis where they might have a half dozen tests, it would just come in as showing a new laboratory record. If it's an exact match with accession number and things of that nature, it would function differently, but generally they're not duplicate reports. In the back. Okay, the question is on the increased workload for the locals, and then if we have a way to target which cases should be worked on first or second or some sort of prioritization. At the local level, when they put together their queues for their work, they can develop their queues by disease. And so each local public health worker can decide what they want their queues to be. And so they can do that themselves. And so if they always want to see a queue with their hepatitis A cases, they can set that up so that when they go in and do their work the next day, hepatitis A will be there, but hepatitis B chronic won't be. So the local health department employees actually do that work on themselves. We don't tell them what order to do things in. They basically make that assessment themselves. But on the other hand, when you see all the additional reports that are coming in for hepatitis B and for hepatitis C, it's just the nature of the disease. It's just hard not to bring them into the system because they are reportable. You can't do anything about it.
Now, with the advent of the PLR and getting it very timely, I think that potentially at the local level, there's a conundrum of how do I manage this with the workforce I have, knowing that all of them need intervention.
Yes. Well, as I said, they have the queues. Something else we've been trying to do with the disease reporting system that we haven't been able to get to yet, but it's actually something we'd like to do is to have our disease reporting system tied into our health alert system so that if there was a hepatitis A report that comes in, whether it's by ELR or by somebody entering it or a meningococcal disease, that it would automatically alert the HON and that the person would know to go into the system to work that case or to do something with it. I think there's some other states that have done that, but we haven't gotten there yet. But exactly right, to make sure that you don't miss the important things when you have so much volume coming into the system. The question is, how does the system handle preliminary versus final? I believe in that situation it's taking a look at the accession number, but it would still append it and provide additional report. And so again, it would just append to the information that's already in there, but the user would see it in their queue as a new lab report that's entered the system. Corrected report would be handled the same way.
Just for the sake of time, are there any other questions? We can probably take one more, and we're a little over our time now, so.
Thank you all for your attention.
Thank you all.